Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 127 with Nathaniel Bozarth. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Nathaniel Bozarth, we explore a number of interesting topics like race, privilege, and equity. This is a hard-hitting show, a topic really near and dear to my heart, and it's important for you, the school leader, to listen to. He also talks about how he would create the history of math class and how he'd run it, and I give you a top 10 ways school could be more magical and incorporate more play, so listen to the end for that one. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show, but before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an amazing free resource for all listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am really excited to connect with today's guest. He is going to push your mindsets and give you some deep history into issues that you need to be thinking about as a school leader. I am joined today with Nathaniel Bozarth, who calls himself a storyteller and curious individual. Trained in the techniques of anthropology, Nathaniel strives to see the small, the minute details that are often overlooked, to see the big, the overarching systems that inform how we live, and to see the seeing, the biases and assumptions that interpret how we see. Nathaniel has produced two web documentaries that are available online for free, Your Fellow Americans and Redream. Both series look at how issues of race and identity affect opportunity in America through the eyes of diverse individuals. Nathaniel now hosts and produces Wide World, a podcast on the past and present of equality in education. Welcome to the show, Nathaniel.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
This is great. Fellow podcaster on the show. So we're going to have a lot of fun today.
Love it. Podcasters unite.
That's right. You know, before I want to get to the story of Wide World, and you were telling me in the pre-chat about this video that went viral recently. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in how you became interested in complex issues, you know, of race and of privilege. Mm-hmm. And can you begin there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I should start by saying that I'm white, so your listeners know. So I'm white, and I had the great opportunity of going to a school in middle school and high school that was not all white, and that actually for the area I lived in, a suburb of Kansas City, had quite a bit of socioeconomic and ethnic diversity. And I think there was something that happened back then that, to be honest, I'm still sort of teasing out and still trying to understand, but something happened back then that kind of clued me into that there was something not quite right, that the way I was being treated as a white person in that setting was not the same as my buddies of color that I was going to school with. And even fast forward to my high school, and this is actually like a really recent discovery for me. So I talked to someone recently who was in class with me, graduated, went to college, then went back and taught at our high school. Now, our high school was interesting because it served the kind of the poorest part of the little suburb of Kansas City that I grew up in, and kind of correspondingly, it was also serving most of the people of color in this suburb. However, it accepted transfer students for special programs. There was a nursing program. There was like an advanced science program there. And they would accept these transfer students from other places in the city who were almost always going to be white and upper income. Not always white, but definitely of a very much higher socioeconomic bracket. Mm. So it functioned sort of like a magnet school in that way.
Okay.
like I said, I lived in the boundaries of a school, so I was of kind of that lower middle to lower income bracket. And what I realize now, what my friend who's a teacher there now told me, is that the teachers in that school have actually been counseled, and this is true to this day, they've actually been counseled to spend more time and energy on the transfer students because they believe, hey, these kids have higher potential. These kids are the ones that are going to go out and do great things. So let's give them more of our time and energy. Let's also give them higher expectations. And then, man, when we have to teach these kids from the slower socioeconomic bracket, like, let's not focus so much on them. And we may pad their grades. We may expect a little less from them, that sort of thing. And again, those people coming from inside the boundaries who are from lower socioeconomic backgrounds were generally people of color. Like I said, I'm white. So what I realize now, and I didn't realize this when I was there, but I think I knew something was up. I knew something was wrong. But what I realize now is that my skin color gave me so much privilege in that school, because it allowed me, even though I was from that lower socioeconomic bracket, it allowed me to be in class with the wealthier kids who had more social capital, who had more resources, who knew they were going to college, so that I was associated with them and I was going to go on their track. So, I mean, like, even as I recount that to you now, it makes me angry. It makes me want to cry. It makes me emotional, just because I get really angry about that injustice.
Yeah, it drives me crazy too. And that's a big reason why I jumped into education. You know, of all the jobs and industries out there, that one really has the ability, right, to make an impact right away. Mm-hmm. And when you're fighting for issues of equity and justice, you know, you can make a big difference quickly, I feel. Yeah. And it takes time. I mean, we're so far than where we need to be, but you can see the fruit pretty quickly and then continue that good work. There's a few things I want to do. I want to share my history just a little bit briefly.
Yeah, please.
And then I want to unpack something for the listeners. And then I want to talk to you a little more about privilege for sure. But my history, I come from Palatine, Illinois, which is a northwest suburb of Chicago. And my parents participated in white flight. So as the city became more diverse, they chose to leave. Okay. And that's always like frustrated me. And so the first thing I did once I had enough money and I was out of college, I moved back to the city, you know, and lived in diverse neighborhoods and worked. I've always worked in schools that had a diverse population or majority served students of color, which ironically, my last position as principal, that school was almost predominantly white and extremely affluent. And I still ask myself, I ask God, I ask the universe, how did I end up there and why? Because I loved serving there, but my resume, like that's not how it fit, but the door opened, I walked through, and that's another podcast, another story.
Right.
And I had a good experience. But going back to Palatine, Nathaniel, I went to a school where the community was diverse. The school was diverse, but when I went to class, I didn't see the diversity.
Yeah, and that's exactly how my school was too.
Yeah, I just saw people that looked like me. And as a kid, though, I didn't get it in high school. I'm like, where are all my brothers and sisters of color? Like, where do they go to class? Because I literally never see them unless it's lunch, PE, or when we play basketball together on the team. Right. So that was strange. What I want to unpack for the listeners, or at least challenge them and share a few observations. One was how you shared from your experience. You know, it's a known fact and true to this day, which is scary. And I hope that my listeners aren't participating in this type of stuff. But the leadership is literally telling the teaching staff, spend more time with the affluent kids who typically are, you know, are white and they have more potential. And all this really, you know, listeners, you get this, your expectations are so incredibly powerful. And Nathaniel said, you know, they'd pad the grades of students of colors and give them a pass. Like, that's not helping anybody. That might help your numbers that you have a graduation rate, but that doesn't set up people for success. So I want to, you know, just remind the listeners, your expectations, like all our kids can meet those extremely high expectations. I've worked in the schools of color and my kids rocked AP, ACT. They, you know, they took rigorous courses. They, not that college is the end all be all, but they got into Ivy Leagues and Big Ten and all, you know, all these different types of universities. Everybody can do it when the person in front of them says you can do it. They'll meet right. those expectations. And so what I want to ask for you, because personally, that idea of privilege had to be physically, like literally taught to me in college. Like, you have privilege as a white male. Mm-hmm. That naturally didn't get it because I shared my experience at Palatine. But it seems like you had an aha moment, didn't have someone to tell you, like, Nathaniel, yo, you are privileged, you know, and what are you going to do about it? But for me, I had that, and it happened in my education class in college. Mm-hmm. So what was that moment for you?
It's definitely, I think it's a gradual opening. I can't say that there was one distinct moment. I do remember we had despite the problems of the high school that I went to, we had a really great principal. And I remember that I did get to be in this, we called it the principal's leadership cadre. And it was a diverse group of students that was well selected so that it did represent the school's socioeconomic and ethnic diversity. And one day we started off in a line, and the principal one by one. So this is like after school one day. So it's, you know, extracurricular type activity. But one by one, she's asking questions to the whole group. Man, I can't remember all the questions, but it was trying to fuss out like how much privilege you had. So I remember like one of the questions was, are your parents still married and together? If so, step forward.
Yep, I did that same thing.
Do you know what it's called? Because I don't know what it's called.
I don't. I call it the line activity.
The line activity. I remember doing this, whatever the questions were, and man, I ended up way out front all of my classmates.
Right.
I mean, again, like despite like that I was really in like the middle to – like I was right in the middle of the socioeconomic class in my school. I was definitely not like the poorest kid, but the richest kid seemed like they lived on a whole other island to me. But I still end up way at the front, and I remember that being a significant moment for me because and like this is kind of interesting, but I think it's important. I hated being up the front.
Yeah.
In that moment, I don't remember it being so much because I felt guilty. Or so much that I felt bad, I saw my privilege from an equity standpoint, where it was like, well, that kind of sucks. But really, I wanted to belong with the kids that were like way on the other side of that spectrum. I remember like part of what like makes me fight for equality is that I just wanted to belong with my friends.
Okay.
But I didn't in that way, like because we had such a different life experience.
So it sounds like you had, you know, a diverse group of friends. I'm just curious, you know, about where you grew up. Like, was that represented in the neighborhood too, or did you just become friends at school?
So it was not representative of the street I lived on. It was representative of the nearby neighborhoods. But I would say that, like, it was still segregated based on like your particular subdivision and the classes too. Like, it's like you said that you had a diverse school, yet your classrooms were not same thing with my school. Like, and again, that's why I see so much of that as being my privilege that I was kind of in those classes and had that kind of better teaching experience, even though what I realized I lost is like, I lost a lot of people that would have been good friends that way.
And just to go back to the line activity to listeners, you know, I'll try to Google that and put it in the show notes for this episode. But in addition to questions like, are your parents still married? I remember questions like, you know, I've had somebody in my family has been locked up, right? Or has been incarcerated. They probably use that word. Something, you know, I'm sure my family has had to use. Food stamps. I've been, you know, pulled over for no reason by the police and that kind of stuff. So it just it gets at these issues of privilege. And I had a similar experience because I looked over my shoulder and again, I was out in front as well. And it was that just was such a visceral, like shocking moment to see my peers and what they've experienced too. Because they're not easy questions. They're not like feel good questions, you know, that, hey, I got an Xbox for my birthday. Everybody take a step forward. Like, you know, it was tough stuff. And the fact that I was moving forward, that really brought it home for me as well. I don't know about you, but I had enough on my plate just thinking about how to operate a building and how to develop my people. That was enough. And that doesn't even include parents. That doesn't even include student issues. And it definitely doesn't include where am I going to find the funding to run all the great programs my students deserve. Well, the great news is I have an amazing free resource for you, the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. That's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. In this guide, you will be exposed to the best fundraising ideas for schools in 2017. And my favorite company that's described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. The reason School Spirit Vending rises above the rest is because they make fundraising so incredibly hassle-free. What if a company would come in, install vending machines with customized stickers? That's right, stickers that had your logo, that had your mascot, that had whatever you and your students wanted installed. They come in, they take care of the machines. You do no work besides having the machines installed in the school, and you get a cut of the profit. That's where you're going to find money to actually run these programs. So check out the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com and definitely give School Spirit Vending a call. Tell them Danny Sunshine sent you. Can we switch gears a bit and talk about the story of starting Wide Ruled and how you got into that?
Yeah. So I love this story because it's just so accidental and kind of hilarious, I think. So my wife and I do some mentoring with college students, which we really enjoy, and we try to be really consistent with it. My wife's like a natural born mentor for college age women. She's incredible. So she kind of pulls me along, and I'm happy to do it. I'm just not as good at it as she is.
What's her name? Give her a shout out.
Yeah. This is my wife's Monica Hashimi Bozarth. She's incredible. So we go to this conference. It's in Jefferson City, Missouri, which is the capital city. And we're getting this opportunity to kind of lead these small groups where we're mentoring these college age leaders. Really cool opportunity. But I'm an introvert. So I go and I enjoy the opportunity. I really like do my best to engage the whole time. But by the time we're done, it's a 2.5 day conference. I am simply exhausted.
Yeah, you're spent.
I'm totally spent because it's all my energy, all my introvert energy is my meter. You know, my life meter is down to the bottom. Like now that little heart is like blinking and there's sound effects, like on a video game. So I get this text message while we're driving back home. It's a 3-hour drive or something. And I get this text message. I have my wife read it. Don't text and drive, folks. My wife reads it and it's something like, hey, Nathaniel, got some dudes, going to do some performances at the shop. Should be a good time. Now, the guy that texted me runs an organization called KC Word Shop, which does poetry and writing with high school students in Kansas City, especially disadvantaged high school students in KC. Really cool program, big supporter. So I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know. I'm really tired. I don't have energy for this, but I do support him, and this is a good opportunity. So I asked my wife, what do you think? Do you think I should go? And she usually doesn't care. She's like, well, I don't care if you go or not. It's up to you.
Right.
But for whatever reason, she was like, no, I think you should go. Mm. And I was like, wait, are you trying to get rid of me? And she's like, no, I feel like for some reason you should go. And I'm like, okay. So I go and it's kind of in a weird part of Kansas City. I find out that it's not at the Word Shop because, you know, he had said shop in the text. It's at his mom's garage, which he and his two brothers had outfit to be a straight up man cave.
I totally wasn't a guess that. My second guess was the garage.
Right. So I walk in and it's a bunch of dudes and we're drinking beer and there's a big pot of homemade soup on the side. And I'm like, oh crap. Like this is not what I wanted to come to. Like I thought I was going to get to like sit in an audience and watch some performances and at least I wouldn't have to talk to anybody.
Exactly.
But this is definitely like I got to expend more introverted energy with a bunch of people I don't know. So what happens is I end up meeting I'll shout out to Brian DeLiesel. Brian DeLiesel is an educator in Kansas City, Kansas. And somehow we start talking about education reform. And I had recently read a book by Neil Postman, a great writer who has several books about education, especially from the 60s and 70s when he did a lot of his writing. So I'm able to kind of spout some ideas from this book. And Brian looks at me and he's like, man, you're really passionate about this stuff. And it kind of hit me and it was like, I mean, yeah, I guess I am. Like, I don't know why I would have read that book if I hadn't been passionate, but for some reason it hadn't really occurred to me. So then he invited me to start coming to observe with this group of teachers that he was leading. And it was all about these teachers who were in the classroom who were trying to figure out ways to reform on the ground in the classroom from the ground up. Name of the group was called Grassroots. Mm. And basically, like, it's kind of all history from there. Like, once I started attending those meetings, Brian and I would kind of talk on the side, and he kind of convinced me, like, you're a producer, you produce some documentary films, you should really produce something about what we're doing here. And I said, Brian, I'll go one bigger. I want to produce something about what you're doing here, but I want to tell more education stories like this, because it became, and here's the crux of it, it became something that I could not do.
That's good.
Caring about education reform is something that, like, it's like it's kind of followed me for a while, because I could tell you other stories before this event happened where, like, the reason I was reading those books, for instance, where it just kind of followed me. Like, I couldn't not pay attention to, like, education reform, education renewal sort of haunting me throughout my life. So I'm glad to finally be honoring that that sustaining passion.
It's an interesting story of, you know, just this this event that seems so almost insignificant. Like, why is my wife telling me I need to go?
Right.
Then showing up, it's beer and soup in a garage, and you're going to have to engage. And it sets you on this path that really, I guess, honors your passion, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, so shout out to my wife for, like, for whatever reason, saying, hey, you should go. Because, if she hadn't said that, this may have never happened.
Right, right. How long have you been married? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I've been married, will be 3 years in November.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah. And when did this garage moment happen?
Oh, so that would have been, what would that be? Like a year and a half ago? Yeah, about a year and a half ago. So it all kind of moved pretty quick from there.
Gotcha.
The first episode of Wide Ruled launched March 1st of 2017.
Yeah.
So the idea kind of grew and crescendoed, and then we launched March 1st.
What have been some of your aha moments and big ideas that have really come to the surface producing that podcast? Because I love how you describe, you know, your work as seeing the small to see the big to see the scene. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what that's been for you producing Wide Ruled.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that kind of was found in the podcast was definitely this idea of teachers across the country for so many years have been done unto, where there's kind of these top-down reforms, which we need. Like, we do need top-down reform and renewal and change to happen. But so many times teachers end up kind of being victimized by that system. And they're sort of disempowered from the opportunity to make changes that they need to happen for their students. And this isn't something that happens just in education. This happens all across the United States in so many different industries, just because so many times the people that are on the ground interacting with the customer or the client, so in the case of education, that are interacting with students, those people are, of course, going to know what their needs are. But the people way up at the top, so we're talking, like, you know, either whether that's in our state capitals or in Washington, D.C., are sometimes a little too disconnected. And you see that in so many little stories. And that's definitely something that I've become really passionate about, just wanting teachers to be empowered in the classroom. I think something else that I get really excited about that I've seen is – this is true for talking to teachers or students. I feel so privileged to get to tell people's stories, because I feel like I get to be sometimes function as a I mean, like a counselor or like a therapist or like a mm-hmm. liberator to some mm-hmm. people. Just because when people, when you ask someone to tell you their story,
right,
you are dignifying them. Mm. You were telling them they were worthy. And that's one of the things that I enjoy most about getting to this podcast is when I get to tell that sort of story where it's very personal, deeply personal to someone,
right,
you can see how it transforms and liberates them. Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy that.
Can we translate that to the school leader context? You know, I hear you saying, mm-hmm. you know, schools aren't going to start podcasts and just start talking, you know, to the community. Maybe they would, but
right.
what do you think school leaders could do to also give the gift of dignity to their yeah. to their staffs, to their students, to their community?
I think it's so simple, but so hard. And I think it's by listening. Well, it was, so here's one thing I thought about recently. Like, and I don't know, again, like if your listeners would fall into this category, and I'm what's about to come out of my mouth, I do not mean it as an insult to anyone because it's so human. It's so authentic and real. I know several principals where, you know, you've been in the classroom a few years. Maybe you're promoted to your teacher leader or an instructional coach. And then maybe a few years later, you jump to being a principal of a school. So you've gone from working with students. Maybe you're more of a content expert where you were very focused on your subject, or maybe you were really an expert on your students, but your expertise wasn't necessarily in leadership development, I believe, Daniel, this is part of why your podcast exists, right? Like as helping people be better leaders. So if that's been someone's path to being a principal, it's likely, and like, again, so human, that they might feel a little insecure. They might feel a little bit kind of shaken by their job. They're clearly going to be excited that they have this new level of leadership and opportunity to make a difference. But I think sometimes what I know happens is that there's a level of insecurity, of fear, because everyone wants to be accepted by their peers and you don't want to blow it, right? Like mm-hmm. you maybe just become a leader in this new position and you're kind of intimidated by the teachers whose shoes you were in not too long ago.
Yeah.
And you maybe haven't had that much training, or you maybe haven't had the opportunity to get the input that you wanted to learn how to take on that role. So I think sometimes what happens is that to sort of defend your rightness, to sort of defend your position, you may be afraid to listen to the teachers around you because that may feel like you're giving up your authority or you're admitting that you don't know what you're doing. And again, like I'm trying to put this in like the best way possible because I don't hold that against anyone. I think that if our leaders in our schools will listen to teachers and give teachers the respect of letting them tell their stories and really deeply listening to them and ask them questions and dignifying with that, I think that's so huge. And that's kind of a type of servant leadership that can be really hard to do because it's vulnerable, right? Like it's mm-hmm. kind of frightening because it's vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Does that all make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's my story. And it's a lot of the stories for folks that find themselves in school leadership, just how you mm-hmm. described it. And it's not everybody's, but it is mine. So I'll own it. And, mm-hmm. and the podcast started, Nathaniel, because I wanted to develop as a leader. I knew that was a need. And that wasn't happening within the district that I had, you know,
mm-hmm.
they just accept you to do the work and the stakes are really high. And if you drop the right. ball, like you're done. I mean, that's just mm-hmm. how it is. Or you could be done for another variety of reasons, but you know what I mean? Right. And there's not a lot of continuous like mentorship, apprenticeship, mm-hmm. like industries and skilled laborers had right. over the years, and they need that. So you're absolutely right on, and that's why I started the podcast. So I just started talking to people much smarter than me with a lot more experience to say, hey, what do you know about leadership? What have you learned from your mistakes? So I could try to avoid those the best possible and then put it out for free through the podcast. But then the next iteration of Better Leaders, Better Schools was the masterminds that I put out. So, you know, right. we're releasing this January 10th. So at this point, I'm either opening my last or I've filled up my last mastermind. I have the capacity to have six groups, work with 60 people. But if you haven't heard this before, Nathaniel, or for the listener that might be new to the show, very quickly, the mastermind is just a group environment. It's a hybrid group coaching and leadership development community. It's 10 to 12 people. that meet virtually for an hour every single week, and we do not fake it. We take off the mask, we pull the curtain back, and we say, this is where I'm struggling. Like, I need help. I don't have an answer to this incredibly complex question. And then the 9, 10, 11 peers help you figure it out, ask you questions. They push your thinking. They offer personal anecdotes. And all of a sudden, your limited amount of experience, you know, raises the room's IQ level to genius. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and that's how you get better as a leader, by putting yourself in a setting where you can really grow. So that's what the mastermind's all about. But you're absolutely right. You know, we don't see that happening that often.
Yeah. Well, and I love that, like, your authenticity. And I love that, I mean, that is part of the goal there, like, to pull off that mask and to take that kind of vulnerable approach. And I love that you're attacking to have a solution to that issue, because that's definitely, I mean, you asked, like, some of the, like, what are things I've observed? And that's absolutely something that's so easy to observe in our schools, like, just the crazy amounts of isolation exactly. that both teachers and administrators have, because unfortunately it has not been built into our system that there are opportunities for collaboration and collision where man, we need them. Like, it's angering to me, because it's just not fair, right? Like,
right,
there's
right,
no
right.
reason why teachers and administrators in our schools shouldn't have the same opportunities for real professional development, and not just watching someone push through a PowerPoint.
It's terrible. It's terrible. But I really think that the mastermind is a solution to that. I felt the isolation and something too that I think gives me credibility to, you know, to the listeners and my clients. I invest in my own mastermind. So not only do I facilitate them, I pay monthly to be coached myself in a different mastermind, just to grow. And
that's awesome.
I did that way before starting it for school leaders, but I saw how I was growing and I looked at our industry and I said, oh my gosh, like, we need this. How much better could education be across the nation, the globe, if we did this on a consistent basis? And a year or two later, working with folks, like, that's been the story.
That's awesome. That's really good.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So tell me about this viral video that you produced.
Okay, so going back to your and I's story. So we were both, like we said, we were both in diverse schools, yet we didn't see that reflected in our classes. Additionally, I mean, the kind of the second half to my story about how I became really concerned with issues of equality and how I became more and more aware of my own privilege was I started to learn about my city at large. So like I said, I grew up in a suburb, mm-hmm. but Kansas City itself has been sort of a blueprint for the rest of the country in terms of real estate segregation. And of course, with real estate segregation, there's a lot of issues that happen, and that affects our schools a lot. We're seeing so a couple years back, I think 2 years ago, Robert Putnam came out with a book called Our Kids, and in it he details how schools are becoming socioeconomically segregated more and more, and how bad that is for our kids. Again, going to my own story, I benefited so much from the students around me that were more well off than I, mm-hmm. because it forced me to be aware of, the expectations that were put on them about college and like ACT prep and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That I may have not been exposed to as much if I had been around only people in my same socioeconomic bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So that to say, I'm very interested and concerned with real estate segregation issues. So I got to team up with a professor from Kansas State University. I know him from my time there studying anthropology. And we did a 13-minute video where we start off in one of the wealthier parts of Kansas City, Missouri. And then we walk east. If you walk east in Kansas City, so let's say we walk no more than 2 miles. So we walk 1 mile east you hit Troost Avenue. And Troost Avenue is this historic and present economic and racial barrier in Kansas City. When you cross that street, everything changes. You go from looking around you and you're seeing like pristine lawns and you're seeing really nice houses to seeing decay, seeing broken sidewalks, to seeing houses that are falling apart, grocery stores, all that sort of stuff. And that line in Kansas City was essentially created for the schools. It was created because white folks didn't want to integrate their students with black folks.
Yeah.
So we recently produced this video, and it's hit over a million views on Facebook, and it's been really exciting to kind of get the word out about that.
What would you add to a school? What class would you add that isn't currently taught that you know of?
So in recent years, I am more and more excited about history. And I love, so clearly history is taught in schools already, sort of. I say sort of just because I could, because I know there were a lot of things missing from my history courses growing up that I wish would have been there.
Well, how about, I got to pause here just because it's always so crazy to read, in Texas and in a history course where they talk about slaves as unpaid workers.
Oof, that's rough.
That was the way they described it. So yeah, history could be taught a little different depending on where you're at.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The content of history in my school wasn't great, but man, I had the worst history teacher I've ever heard of in my life. He would sit there and he would take, this is an aside, but he would take phone calls one in the middle of class because he had a landscape company. So he would like pause class and be like, oh, sorry, I got to get this phone call. And then the way that he actually taught the class was you'd walk in every day and he'd give you a list of like 20 terms.
To define?
He'd have you write them down and then he would read his notes.
Oh my gosh.
And then tell you to take notes from his notes. It was the least exciting and, to an adolescent male, I was so like, I just wanted to, go run and like. There's nothing active about that. It was just it was a painful way to learn history and don't remember anything from that.
Right.
So anyway, I'm interested in history though, not as so much a class in and of itself, but as a vehicle to learn other subjects. Mm. So like, I want to learn like the history of math. Like I think it'd be so cool if instead of teaching, algebra, you have a class that's called like the history of math, and maybe you'll cover all the same content as you would in maybe geometry and algebra. You might have to kind of throw two things together, but you teach it from the lens of change. Like, this is how we did math then. Here's what the culture was like then. Here's how we did math then. Here's how that affected society. And then this person stepped outside of the box and tried to start doing something different. And then because of that, it had this effect in society. I think it would make mathematics so much more interesting, but it also teaches something less tangible, and that is that it teaches students about how society is always changing, about how new ideas happen, about how sometimes when new ideas first come out, like they're like really, really rejected. And that in some, like I remember my science course, like my AP chemistry was somewhat taught in that way. But I'd love to see more of that in schools where there's kind of a narrative historical approach to the teaching of new content.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies handpicked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. When you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
I go kind of personal on this. I think of my friend Brian Valentine. I just think of this guy that I met a couple years back, and like as soon as I met him, he's not a tall guy, he's not a big man, but he had so much power, which he'll laugh if you hear this. He had so much power. Like as soon as I saw him and I shook his hand, it was like, damn, there is some power to this man. But right.
That's a
but
handshake.
There was so much gentleness to him. I mean, the reason I see him as a leader is because he goes around calling out the power in other people, which in turn like makes him feel powerful, if you know what I mean. Like, but he goes around in every conversation I've ever had with him, he is always encouraging people, telling them how powerful they are, finding ways for the people he's around to see their own greatness. And man, I want to be just like him. Like that's a leader to me.
Well, what I love about that, you know, short story there about Brian, you know, you get power by empowering others, you know,
right.
And going back to the masterminds and all that kind of stuff. And you talked about, you know, not listening because you're afraid. It's really about fear, right? And as a novice leader, you're trying to convince people, I'm right. Like this way we're going is right. But what I try to teach, you know, by listening, by giving away power, you know, those type of things that seem a little opposite of what you might naturally think, it actually gets you more impact. And so Brian is empowering others, and that goes back to the teachers. And well, you were talking about expectations, spend more time with these kids. Well, how are those teachers going to think about those white affluent kids as opposed to past those kids, you know? So by really empowering people, speaking into them, their greatness, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it gets people fired up. And for some people, that's the one moment when you tell somebody, I believe in you, you can do it, and it's hard. That's the one moment that dramatically changes their life, and they just need to hear it one time.
Mm-hmm.
Love that about Brian. All right. Well, Nathaniel, we're entering quick fire rounds. So like four questions and shorter answers. And then the last one you could take some time with. What is one book every principal should read right now and why?
Awesome. So again, I'm going to go back to my folks on history. I just read The Teacher Wars by Dana Goldstein. It's not a new book, but it is a really good history of the education profession and how inequality and combat has been ubiquitous throughout. So really good primer at the history of education.
And listeners, you know that all these books will be linked up for you in the show notes. We had Our Kids by Robert Putnam, The Teacher Wars by Dana Goldstein. You mentioned Neil Postman. I got to go find that book in the title. But
End of Education, I think, was the book in question.
Awesome. So we'll get that linked up for you, too. Nathaniel, what do you do for fun?
I don't do much for fun. I work all the time. I think I listen to music. I have a big vinyl collection. I'm a big fan of hip hop. So I'll either go buy vinyl or listen to vinyl at my home. I love music.
Top record you're listening to right now, what is it?
Ooh, man, I found a kind of rare record that I'm really excited about. It's Africa Bambaataa and James Brown. Africa Bambaataa, it was a disc, kind of early hip-hop, kind of disco artist. He really brought disco into hip-hop. The album is called Unity. I love this thing, man. It's great.
I'd love for you to check out this Zimbabwean artist named Ja Praza. J-A-H-P-R-A-Y-Z-A-H. I think you might really like him.
I will do that. Thank you.
Absolutely. If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
If I could be, you know, this is a funny thing. If I could be automatically good at something, I would be a cinematographer. I'm really good at operating a camera. I have produced documentaries, but I'm going to be dead honest with you. I never hold the camera or like I'll point and be like, hey, you should capture that. but I'm not a camera operator. So I'd love to be automatically good at that because I'm really self-conscious about the fact that I can produce a documentary, but can't I can't operate a camera. It's hilarious.
That's okay, man. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe for one day if you could?
Yeah, for one day all across the globe, I want students to walk into that building And I want them to read, "You are worthy."
You are worthy. I love it. This is the big question here. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
I didn't prepare for this question. I'm going to be honest. I was hoping you wouldn't ask this question. I think top three priorities are going to be, I want that school to empower the students to explore their interests. I'm probably going to go with a project-based model, but really also kind of a play-driven student interest model. And maybe since I have no financial constraints here, there's going to be like a hyperloop that's going to go straight from the school building to several neighborhood businesses, so that there can be really awesome, easy connections between the businesses around that school, you know, and maybe there can be like a super express train that takes them to like other countries in the world too. So they can be exposed to a variety of, we just got really like sci-fi here.
That's great.
So they can be exposed to like all sorts of things around the world. I mean, as someone who has a background in anthropology, I think exposure to other cultures and difference is so good because it really frees people from the constraints of their own culture or their own the shackles of tradition is what one anthropologist called it. So that would be a big priority for this school, kind of collisions with and opportunities to be exposed to a huge variety. That was a terribly rambly answer to your question, but I kind of got to it, I think.
No, here's why it's good. So, you know, the exposure to access, that's important. But you said, you know, I kind of got sci-fi. And there's a guy you might like named James Altucher. And I definitely tell all the listeners to check him out. He, you know, you're either going to love him or hate him type of thing. But he has this habit, a ritual of just writing 10 ideas a day. And for him, it's like businesses and creative stuff and all this kind of thing. But the point is, if you continue to write 10, you know, a lot of them are going to suck, but some of it's going to be gold. And the idea for you is the access and exposure. Maybe we won't get a super train that'll bring kids from Kansas City to Tokyo, but what if we did? And to be honest, so I'm writing my first book. I'm going to read a real short section to you. Because I wanted to comment on this idea of play and that Disney shouldn't be the happiest place on earth. It really should be the schools, because guess what? It's not Mickey Mouse that makes him magical. It's the kids and their imagination. But because of the environment, the creativity and beauty and magic is stifled in one place and not in another. So I wrote a list, 10 ways to incorporate more play and magic into school. I wrote this morning. So it's amazing how it all lines up. And here's the thing, guys, a lot of these ideas suck, but if you could find the gold nugget in each or even just one, maybe it'll transform school. So 10 ways we can incorporate more play. 10 to 15 minute recess after every freaking class. One morning class that infuses all the core subjects and arts into a single class. The afternoon is just for playing and team building and maybe a nap. You should dress up like my friend. Shout out to Andy Jax. I think that's _ Andy Jax on Twitter. He frequently dresses up as a banana or a gorilla to create a fun atmosphere for his kids and staff. Build some type of writer game at the school for kids to play before and after school, during lunch, and passing periods. Why not? Ryan Jackson's been on this show 3 times, and he and his students built a functioning escape room in the high school.
Love that.
Create just one class called Play. Put one smart adult in there, and his or her job is just to resource kids, get out of the way, and play with students. Listen to this one. Add a bunch of live animals to the school. Let them roam the halls in the classes. Let the kids take care of them. See what happens. Start every day with an all-school assembly and dance-off between students and staff every single day. Protect the arts, clubs, and sports at your school. Do not cut them. When anyone, a kid or an adult, is taking themselves too seriously, throw a pie in their face. Create a nickname. Wouldn't that be awesome? That'd be awesome.
Yes.
Like, that would be, you wouldn't need detention. If somebody just started acting nuts, just a pie in the face. Boom, move on. Create a nickname for every student and staff member and use it lovingly. And here's a bonus idea, number 11. write a movie, play, or musical and give everybody a part in the school and then film it, present it every single year and start over.
That's great. I like that. That was fun.
Man, I have so much fun doing this. So, Nathaniel, thank you so, so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Oh, right. Oh, man. Parting words of advice. Give yourself a break. Give yourself a break and love yourself. I'm a terribly anxious person with a low self-esteem. So that's what I'm learning right now. So give yourself a break and love yourself. Best way to get in contact with me, man, you can reach me on Twitter at @Bo_Nathaniel, or you can always email me at Nathaniel@brainroot.tv. Nathaniel spelled IEL on the end. I know some people spell it a different way and that confuses people. So thanks so much for having me, Daniel. This has been a blast. This has been a really big blast. I'm really honored to be here.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's been equally fun for me. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Nathaniel. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com. Type Nathaniel in the search bar and the show notes page will pop up. You get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Nathaniel, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Cheers.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.